afternoon. You're listening to Verum Sports on your Saturday afternoon. Of course you are. And as many of us begin or just finished thinking about Valentine's Day, so many of the Premiership teams and fans consider their new presents and gifts as the January transfer window has just closed. It's an interesting one, and a rise from last year. Still a big expenditure, over £230 million spent, but down from the all-time high. Lots to unpack in the world of football transfers. Many people consider that some of the trends influenced heavily by the financial fair play rules. To give us a bit of an insight into that, we're lucky tonight to be joined on the line by Andy Turner from Mercer and Hall, a top 40 accountancy firm, one of the top accountancy firms for private clients, and one of the top financial planning companies in the UK, with offices in St Albans, Rickmansworth, Milton Keynes and London as well. They are well placed and well informed to give us a bit more insight into the world of football transfers. So Andy, good evening, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Doing really, really well. Honestly, great to have you on the show. Really fascinated by this. A fascinating article that you've penned, Andy, relating to the world of football economics, particularly pertaining to the transfer window. First and foremost, there's a strong idea, isn't there? A strong suggestion that financial fair play rules could have had some kind of influence on some of the trends in this year's January spending. Can you just remind us, give us an insight, really, into what the FFP rules are?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So the financial fair play rule, there's one major rule that means that a club can't exceed £105 million loss in total over a three-year period. So that's roughly a loss of £35 million a year. So a club can't exceed that £35 million a year.
So
there are some other rules around salaries, but they're very detailed and
they get very nuanced as well, don't they? It is interesting, though, that there is that clear kind of demarcation point. I guess when you hear financial fair play, almost instantaneously, many people's heads, synonymous with it, is defending champions Man City, who, by all accounts, kind of a little bit near the knuckle in that. And I think recently, a bit more, I think over 60 million was found that they kind of shifted at a loss, again, moving them away from that 105 million loss point over the three-year mark. Is this a bit of a misnomer to call them financial fair play rules? Or do you think there is kind of, a level playing field and they are a good way of going about things?
No, I think the financial fair play rules have, served their purpose in terms of trying to make a level playing field and trying to stop clubs spending beyond their means. The issues around Man City, mainly related to the Etihad sponsorship, Etihad Airways being owned by the Abu Dhabi government, and Manchester City being owned by the Abu Dhabi royal family, and therefore, is there a related party, and is that transaction of sponsorship at what's called fair value?
I guess always in all kind of parties, in all kind of partnerships, there is this danger, isn't there, of conflict of interests. I know in the world of rugby union recently, of course, Saracens very much in the foreground when it comes to some slight deviancy in that regard. Just is there clarity on what constitutes a non-conflict of interest kind of related party, particularly when it comes to football clubs' finances? Or is it still a little bit of a grey area in your head at the moment?
I believe there's still a little bit of a grey area. I mean, there are well-documented issues out there with Derby County at the moment, and issues around transactions with their ground and the owners. And, it's very difficult to work out, what is a transaction with an owner and how far the related party definition goes, and what is fair value and what isn't. And, I strongly believe that there ought to be some form of sort of pre-approval of transactions by the league so they could rubber stamp them rather than a club doing the transaction and then having to wait and see whether, it does fit the rules or not. So I think a pre-approval process by the leagues would be a good idea.
I'm inclined to agree with that, and we can only wait and see. But I do think that at least a kind of step in the right direction is this financial fair play regulations that we've got now. Really interested to get your take on it, because, again, compared to the boom year of 2017-2018, this year's window, where $230 million gross was expended, is down. I think it exceeded $430 million back in that aforementioned 2017 period. Yeah. Nevertheless, though, it is still the second highest figure ever. So I just wonder, is it still the case, though, at the moment, clubs are so desperate to keep that Premier League status that they will look to spend big when they can in these windows?
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt that clubs will want to stay in the Premier League. I think the costs of going out of the Premier League have been estimated at around, you know, 50 or 60 million in terms of cost to the clubs. And the one thing about this window, though, is that, you know, the January window is always a window that is very difficult to get players to move just because it's in the middle of the season,
yep,
as opposed to the summer window. The one key thing that we did see in this window was the number of loan transactions with a option to purchase at the end. And, you know, whilst that headline figure is lower, there was a significant number of loan transactions with the option to buy should it work out for the clubs.
Do you think that's going to be a trend that we're likely to see continuing and maybe building on and over the coming seasons?
I do, because it's probably down to the financial fair play rules that clubs don't want to just spend big immediately.
Do you know something in that? And I think it will unpack along the same theme. That one of the trends that I noticed was a very small amount of intra-Premier League transfers during the last window. I think only it accounted to only 2% of the total gross expenditure. But as you say, interesting though, they're almost compensating with this loan move that's come into the fore. It really is going to be fascinating times at the moment as everybody kind of competes for what they can. Determined, of course, to stay in the Premier League. Of course, you know, there's a reason, isn't there, that the Championship playoff final is the most expensive game or most financially rewarding game on planet Earth, trumping the Champions League final.
Yeah, that's very interesting. But it's mainly been driven by effectively the TV money that goes to the clubs in the Premier League. So if you look at the Premier League, I think if you look at last year, the total sort of central payments from the Premier League in terms of TV money and add-ons, the bottom club got roughly 100 million and the top club got about 150 million. So, you know, that's the sort of financial awards we're talking about here.
Do you think there will ever be almost a la how there is purportedly in rugby union, certainly has been embraced to a great parity effect in the States, a salary cap process? Or do you still think that the economics of football will always be slightly skewered to the haves as opposed to the have-nots?
Well, I think one of the criticisms of financial fair play is that because it generally works upon the loss, and that's one of the major rules, this 105 million loss I talked about before, means that, you know, if you are a bigger club and you are already making significant amounts of commercial income, then it's very difficult for some of those smaller clubs to try and compete, because you just can't spend as big as some of the bigger clubs. So that's one sort of aspect. Moving on, you mentioned salary caps. I mean, salary cap is what they had in rugby. And Saracens, you know, fantastic team. I think they won 4 out of the last 5 Premiership titles.
Yeah, the first English club to win 3 European titles. It is a dynasty in any sense of the word. But, interesting to get your thoughts on this.
Yes. I'm not sure salary caps work that well. And, you know, the problem with salary caps is that people will try and find a route around them, which I think is what Saracens tried to do.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, You know, they've seen the implications of that, and the implications to the league, the players and the fans are quite severe.
Yeah, the ripple effect of that is going to be long and quite magnified. So as it stands, there's this old one, this old maxim in the world of sales, where they say sales for show, profits for a pro. Is it, again, with the mindset that really the FFP focuses on avoiding or working towards avoidance of loss? What can clubs do to improve their financial position and, I guess, ultimately work towards being sustainable and profit-focused?
Yeah. So I worked in the past with a lot of finance directors of Premiership clubs, and one of the things that they really do manage to is the financial fair play rules. And they are looking at, they look at a potential transaction for a potential player, and they model the cost of that player and the cost of his transfer and how that's going to be effectively written off over the period of his contract. And you know, they are actually doing that in a very, very detailed manner, so that they comply with the rules, because non-compliance with these rules mean potentially fines, points deductions, transfer embargoes. And, you know, they aren't great, and most clubs need to continue to spend to stay in the Premier League. And if you've got a transfer embargo, that makes it remarkably difficult.
I'm really fascinated by this whole era that we are in, actually, whereby in many ways certain players, I think you mentioned Derby County, fascinating with the naming rights of the stadium there, but I think obviously they've got a Wayne Rooney, and I know he's still capable on the pitch, but you know, players like Rooney with their kind of social media following and their potential almost sub-brand within the football club's infrastructure mean that they're almost more valuable for what they deliver off the pitch than perhaps even what they do on the pitch. I just wonder to what extent clubs in the Premier League will continue a shift towards players almost as an asset and building towards that, you know, kind of bigger brand focused orientation.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. And I'm sure Derby County with Wayne Rooney have sold a lot of shirts with Rooney on the back, and you know, that does drive significant levels of income. I think if you speak to some of the younger generation now and ask them, you know, who they support, they talk about clubs, but they also talk about players. And, you know, I don't know whether it's driven by the gaming industry, but, you know, people in the younger generation now talk about supporting players as much as clubs, and that's very interesting.
I think in many ways this has happened for some time, but Neymar, I think, almost embodies that. And one of the things that almost blows my fragile little mind, Andy, is that I know that unless there's a massive ground swell and a kind of seismic shift, which I don't envisage in the near future, there will be a £1 billion footballer in the very near future. And that's mind-blowing.
I, you know, don't disagree, but, you know, it's if you think about where the income comes in the Premier League, it's mainly through revenue from TV. So as long as we all continue to pay to watch television and the product is good, then, you know, that money finds its way through to the players and in terms of wages and transfer fees.
In terms of kind of maybe not necessarily a team like, you know, Manchester United and Manchester City these days, they're always going to be such an international appeal that, you know, that they're always going to be very, very profitable in and of themselves. But, you know, we follow Watford here, obviously struggling a little bit on the pitch this season. But again, they're never going to have that same net appeal. I guess my question really is, what can they do? What should they be doing to consider cost control matters, maybe to look to think outside the box and increase revenue? What do they need to do to work with and benefit from the FFP scenario?
Yeah, so I think in the case of Watford, I think they brought in two players during the transfer window that's just gone. you know, and they were moderately priced by today's standards. I think what clubs like Watford can do is to invest in some of the younger players. And this has been another trend in the January window as well, is that a lot of clubs have been looking at young talent that might not yet be proven, that can go into the under-23 squad, that's going to develop and become, you know, the superstar player. And, you know, the clubs like Watford, it is difficult to compete because, you know, they're financially way different from the Liverpool or the Manchester Uniteds or the Manchester Cities that you've mentioned. But for them, investing in youth and watching youth come through is the right way forward. Or, you know, getting youthful players, I think from Italy they've been very successful. And they've actually, if you think about Watford, they've brought in some very, very good players that have gone on to be you know, superstars.
Well, Rickard Dielsa, just off the top of your head there, you know, again, they do, I think, have a very savvy way of working with the system, which is to their credit. Just, I guess, final question, really, Andy. You've really provided some massively important insights into this. I wonder, we talk here about the FFP as it applies to the Premier League, and we've spoken about the implications of being in the Premier League, but just how well, at the moment, do you think football is looking after its grassroots? Here in St. Albans City Football Club, for instance, there was a bit of a, almost a mini schism, whereby there was a bit of a fan boycott because they made a decision at the start of the season to lift prices up by £2 to £18, which many people felt for that sixth tier level football is far too high. And again, I hear that point, but I speak to the chairman there, and, you know, he doesn't make any money out of it, really. A boiler breaks at that level, it's £5,000. For a Man City or what have you, I mean, you know, that's you find that money down the back of your couch, or you gain that in interest whilst you have a little cat nap. But obviously, at a lower level, massively different. I guess just what I'm intrigued to get your take on is the economics of football. Are they doing enough to kind of spread the love throughout the whole game, or are we becoming increasingly just a kind of Premier League orientated world?
Yeah, it's a very good question. My view is that, you know, there's always more that can be done, and, you know, you look at the money as you go down the leagues, and, you know, the Premier League is massive, the Championship is still okay, and then you get into Division 1, Division 2, and then get into lower leagues, and, you know, there is not very much money there at all. The Premier League clubs will talk about solidarity payments that go down the league, but in terms of grassroots football, you know, there is definitely more that can be done.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. But again, it's easy for me to say so in a lovely, warm studio. And I love the notion, and I'm all for it. But unfortunately, I don't have the answers. But I'm sure if you listening do, love to hear from you. Tweet us at Verulam Sport. Get involved. Andy, I've got to tell you, really appreciate your time. And you've been ever so insightful. Obviously, huge respect for what you do at Mercer & Hole. Again, a top 40 accountancy firm. One of the top accountancy firms for private clients. And one of the top financial planning companies across the country. Offices here in St. Albans, London, Rickmansworth, and also Milton Keynes to boot. Is there anywhere on your website or that we can go for more information or more insight into your take on the all things financial fair play?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go onto our website at Mercer & Hole, you will be able to see you know, my article on financial fair play. And also around what we do in terms of the local community and the whole expertise around accountancy, tax, financial planning. We've got experience in lots of different sectors, and I've got experience in lots of sports and media.
Andy, really appreciate that. And just once again, that website for us again.
Just go onto the website at Mercer & Hole.
Hey, perfect. I'm sure loads of information there. Again, these guys are very good at what they do. Top 40 accountancy firm, one of the top accountancy firms for private clients, and one of the top financial planning companies across the country. Do check them out. Andy, once again, appreciate your time tonight. Have yourself a quality evening and keep up the excellent work.
Thank you very much, and you.